He, Jiekumbanpa, once wrote, "My imagination is my main Buddha image. I place the Buddha in the presence of that imagination." This is the correct way to practice. On the other hand, there are some people who quote the life of Jiekumbanpa merely as an excuse to avoid spending their wealth on a decent altarpiece. They are not renunciates, they just have a cheap attitude. Their problem is their priorities. So if their problem is their priorities, they can quote that, "Oh, I have a simple altar, I have simple things, and I have a simple life," but their priorities are different. Because if their altars are simple and cheap and of the worst materials and they can afford better, we can look around their houses, we can look around their bathrooms, we can look around the bedrooms to see the kind of items that they buy for themselves. So if we are able to get better, a better altar, get better images, and make these, we should, of course, according to situation and convenience. If we cannot, then of course, whatever we can afford, that's the best. Whatever we can do, that's the best. If we can and we get cheap ones, it shows that where our priorities are, and it shows our lack of dedication, lack of confidence, and lack of knowing the worth of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So we should not use this quote or this example for ourselves. A beautiful altar is not merely a household decoration. It is an energy field meant to encourage mindfulness of the Dharma and the spiritual path. A beautiful altar is not merely a household decoration. It is an energy field meant to encourage mindfulness of the Dharma and the spiritual path. We do not make a beautiful altar, we do not make beautiful offerings in order that our friends, our relatives, and our neighbors, and our visitors will be impressed and see what a great practitioner we are. If we do that, then the whole purpose of having an altar, the whole purpose of making offerings, has become a worldly, another vehicle to have more delusions, to increase our delusions and attachments. We should have that altar as a merit field, encouraging us to be mindful of the Dharma and Dharma practice. And the more beautiful it is, shows our devotion to the three jewels. It should not be an object of possession. It is not your possession. You cannot possess the Buddha. Therefore, it should not be done or made or offered or arranged in a way with a motivation to impress others. One should completely get that motivation out, because if it is done to impress others, it becomes just an object of art, and therefore there is no benefits. No benefits whatsoever. A beautiful altar is spiritually inspiring, but when it is just made in order to impress others with one's supposed religiosity or as a status symbol, it merely becomes another cause of negative karma. It is important that the source of one's images, scriptures, and so forth are pure. An image made by or purchased from a prophet monger is unacceptable. People who make religious images and print spiritual books should do so out of pure motivation. As professionals, they should make a reasonable living from their time and effort. But their attitude should be to bring benefit to people and not merely to make a large profit. From our side, we should take care that the artifacts we acquire are purchased from sincere people. Also, not only that, the money that we use to acquire it should come from pure, good means of livelihood. If we have stolen that money, we have coerced that money, we have tricked people out of that money, or we have squeezed that money out of people, or in any way obtained that money through unholy or insincere or unjust or negative ways, and we buy the images, again, nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. Even the money that we use to buy the offerings and the money that we use to buy the offerings, the images and the text, should be from a clean, pure, and honest source. If the source is not clean and honest and pure, and we do that with we buy images, the ends does not justify the means. So again, you negate the karma. You can spend 20, 30, 40, 50,000 ringgits on beautiful statues and give gifts everywhere, or purchase one huge statue for your house, but the way you acquired the money is dishonest and wrong. What use is that? What use is that? So even the way you obtain the money for the sake of Dharma should be totally honest. If you honestly get only 100 ringgits and with that you buy a statue, and you dishonestly get 500,000, you should not use the 500,000 for images, let alone anything else. You should use the 100 ringgits to buy a simple, nice plastic Buddha, or a stone Buddha, or a clay Buddha. That would be more beneficial. That would have more purpose and use. So even the money that you use, or the funds that you use, should come from reliable, trustworthy, sincere, honest means. It should come from that to do anything regarding to the Dharma. even the money that you offer to your teachers, to the monks, to the sangha, to dhanas, to temples, anywhere should be gotten from honest and good means. If you're a very successful businessman or business lady, and you have gotten so much profits and a lot of money, make sure that that money has come honestly before you make offerings to the temples. Because it will only collect merit if it was gotten honestly and truthfully and without damage to others. Otherwise, ill-gotten funds offered to temples bring you no merit. Do not think that the Buddhas are sitting there counting their ang paos, waiting for your little red packets. They are not. They do not need your little red packets. You offer little red packets and ang paos to Buddhas and the enlightened beings and three jewels for you to collect merit, for you to collect, to cultivate your merits. So therefore, make sure that the means that has come by is totally honest and totally well. Even if you do great charities and great works and the money that is ill-gotten, it will be of no benefit. It cannot be of benefit. How can we harm in order to do good? It cannot be. So the money and the funds that we have gotten must be honest. It must be without having the basis of having harmed other beings. The six preliminaries of doing your meditations, the six preliminaries of doing your prayers are, number one, cleaning the place of practice and setting up the altar. Number two, arranging an attractive display of offerings. Number three, sitting correctly in a meditational posture and then taking refuge in developing body-mind, the mind to wish others to do this practice for the sake of freeing others. Number four, generating the visualization of the field of merit. In this case, we visualize Jeremji coming from Ganden heaven, Tushita heaven, and inseparable from our gurus, surrounded by the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and deities. Number five, offering the seven-limbed devotion together with the symbolic offerings of the universe. The seven-limbed devotion is in Jeremji's prayer. So when we recite that, the seven limbs are there. Invitation, akasa, dedication, prostration, offering, confession, rejoicing, dedication, it's all there. So Jeremji's practice is very complete again. So seven-limbed devotion together with the symbolic offering of the universe is mandala, which is what I just did now. Mandala offerings, which we'll learn tonight. Offering prayers and supplications to the gurus in the line of transmission, which is what I just did right after that. Making supplications to the gurus, from my guru up to their guru, to their guru, to their guru, in a condensed form, all the way up to the original one, which is Guru Buddha Shakyamuni, the enlightened one. So to make supplications, then you do your particular meditations, you do your particular practices, you do your particular breath meditations or tantric, whatever you like to do after that. So number one, the six preliminaries should be, when these are there, then your meditation and the effects will be very powerful. Number one, cleaning the place of practice. Number two, arranging an attractive display of offerings. Number three, sitting correctly in meditational posture and then taking refuge in developing the body-mind. Number four, generating the visualization of the field of merit. Number five, offering the seven-limbed devotion together with the symbolic offering of the universe, mandala. Offering prayers and supplication to the gurus and the gurus of the line of transmission. This is on page 139 in this book that we have Xeroxed. And again, I thank the person and the people involved in having this Xerox done. It was donated to all of us. And I'm sorry if it has not been enough. Please share. So on page 139, you'll see that on the top, the second sentence, the six preliminaries are as follows. Cleaning the place of practice, setting up the altar, arranging an attractive display of offerings, sitting correctly in a meditational posture, and then taking refuge in developing body-mind. Generating the visualization of the field of merit. Offering the seven-limbed devotion, together with a symbolic offering of the universe. Offering prayers and supplications to the gurus in the line of transmission. These things that I have especially extracted from certain books for you, please take the time and please read through these and study through these so that the efforts of the people involved are not wasted. Of course, it's not wasted, but also a sense of appreciation for their hard work. So this one I have personally picked out for all of you to take out a book on how to set up your offering, how to cultivate the guru in short, and also how to make offerings. It's all in here, short and well, and explained And this is from the sermon at the Great Prayer Festival by His Holiness the Great 13th Dalai Lama, who has, it has been translated into English. So, it is extracted from this book, Path of the Bodhisattva Warrior, and on the cover, you see a cover, you see a beautiful photo of His Holiness the Great 13th Dalai Lama, Gyalsipin Gyatso, the incarnation of the 1,000-armed Papa Chenisi, or Avalokiteshvara. So, please read through this, please look through this. This is very precious and it's very good. I've been studying this for many, many years now, and still there's a lot of things in there to learn. Every time I read it, something else new arises. Then, then let's look here on page 156, which is in your Xerox copies. We're not going to read through the whole thing, but we'll read parts and parts of it so we can follow along, please. Page 156. Shri Krishna. 156, after the two stanzas here. As said here, one must spur oneself on in the quest for enlightenment. The practice of the spiritual path is a supreme means of accomplishing the benefit of both this and future lives. But whether or not you practice is solely up to you. Nobody can drag you to enlightenment. You have to walk yourself. It is important to engage in spiritual practice from the present moment onward without procrastinating. You must teach yourself to appreciate and maintain the attitude which realizes that now is the time for practice. Do not waste a moment. In order to accomplish the path of enlightenment, one needs to continually generate merit and purify hindrances. This twofold purpose is the point behind the daily practice of the six preliminaries. So the point of the six preliminaries is to generate merit and to create, generate merit and to purify hindrances based on negative karma. This twofold purpose is the point behind the daily practice of the six preliminaries. Last year I spoke on the first of these six, cleaning the place of meditation and arranging an altar with symbols of the body, speech, and mind of the enlightened ones. This year, I would like to say a few words about the second preliminary, that of arranging on the altar a display of faultless offerings. Here, the word faultless refers to making the offerings without contamination from faults in inner motivation, the actual substance, and the nature of the offering, the manner in which the offering is made, and so forth. Motivation is the most important factor in the practice of offering. The substances used as the basis of the offering themselves have no mind stream, so it is important that the practitioner see it to that the attitude within his or her own mind is pure. Just as food is mixed with poison may look, smell, and taste good, yet will be inedible, similarly, offerings made with a wrong mental framework become contaminated and are therefore inappropriate. The correct motivation is to approach the practice with a prayer that any energy thus generated will contribute to the attainment of enlightenment as a means of benefiting the world. Examples of incorrect motivation are to make offerings with a selfish hope of achieving personal happiness for oneself alone in distant future lives, or with a mind attached to samsara perfection or to thought of personal liberation. The fundamental attitude should be the altruistic bodhisattva motivation, aspiration. Thus, after the first preliminary has been performed, that of cleaning the place of practice and arranging an altar with representations of the body, speech, and mind of the enlightened ones of the past, present, and future, one should generate a sincere motivation and set out a display of offerings. Not making offerings is a sign of lack of spiritual conviction, and lack of spiritual conviction is a sign of weakness in Dharma practice. Some people, that's very important. Not making offerings is a sign of lack of spiritual conviction, and lack of spiritual conviction is a sign of weakness in Dharma practice. Some people say that they do not like to rely upon the practice setting up elaborate offerings to the three jewels, and that they prefer to rely exclusively from the fruits of meditation. This is a mistake for both teacher and student alike. Tsongkhapa's extensive Lamrim states, saying that one does not like to rely on practice of making offerings when engaged in the quest for enlightenment is a sign of limited understanding of the nature of enlightenment path. The daily practice of setting up offerings is a solid way of generating positive spiritual energy and dispelling obstacles. It prepares the way for successful meditation. As with other supportive practices, it is not meant to be a substitute for meditation, but rather as a supplement to it, a supplement. As for the actual things offered, it was the recommendation of Lama Atisha that we Tibetans mainly set out water bowls as symbols of various sensory objects. Either 7 or 8 are used, one for our body, speech, and mind, and one to each represent the object of 5 senses. So you can either do 7 offerings or you can do 8. 7 represents the 7 steps that Buddha took at first immediately when he was born. He took 7 steps in the 4 cardinal directions, raised his holy finger up to the air, up to the sky, and proclaimed that this will be my last rebirth. Or you can use 8 representing the 5 sensory and the 3 of the body, speech, and mind of oneself. So you can use either 8 or you can use either 7, which we'll talk about more. Then, Adisha commented that water is one of the best substances to use, for it does not generate attachment in the mind of the practitioner, and although to us it is merely water, the enlightened beings regard it as ambrosial nectar. It is said to be important to proceed with mindfulness when setting out the water offerings. It is said to be important to proceed with mindfulness when setting out the water offerings. If the bowls are not completely filled, this becomes an omen that one shall become impoverished. If they are not filled to a uniform level, this portends that one's meditation shall become unbalanced. If they are caused to overflow, this indicates that one shall fail in one's disciplines. The amount of water that you put in the water bowls should be 1 rice grain from the rim. A variation of the water offerings is to put, that was my own remark, it's not here. So the amount that you put in should be 1 rice grain from the rim. A variation of the water offering is to put out 2 water bowls for body and speech, water to wash the feet and to rinse the mouth, and a center oil for the mind, and then for the 5 articles of symbolizing the object of the 5 senses. The water bowls are substituted with things related to the individual senses, such as flowers for the object of touch, incense for the object of smell, a butter lamp for the object of sight, food for the object of taste, and conch shell for the